You are listening to episode number 17 of the Secondary Science Simplified podcast. Hey there! For the month of April, I am doing podcast episodes all based on your requests. And so today's episode is all about celebrating Earth Day in your secondary science classes. Earth Day is a worldwide observance on April 22nd, and it is the largest secular holiday in the entire world. So in this episode, we will cover why you should take the time to celebrate with your students and exactly how to do that. Let's dive in. This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I'm passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You're in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode. Before we talk about Earth Day, I want you to know that this episode and last week's and next week's are all episodes based on requests I have received from you. I love making episodes based on what you will find helpful. So if there is something you want to hear about on the podcast, please shoot me a DM on Instagram at itsnotrocketscience or its.not.rocket.science and let me know. I'll link it in the show notes as well so you can find me easily. And again, one of those topics that you all have been requesting in my DMs was to know more about celebrating Earth Day with your students, since that is coming up. And I am not going to lie, I used to be the absolute worst about taking the time to celebrate holidays or really do anything seasonal with my students. It's actually one of the reasons I've had so much fun this past year making seasonal freebies for Halloween and winter and Valentine's Day that I've been sharing with all of you on my email list. They've just all been things that I wish I had had the time and energy to not only create, but also implement with my own students when I was teaching full time. So I really, really enjoyed being able to do that for you all. And just a side note, if you're new to the podcast, hi, I'm so glad you're here. I'm currently on maternity leave with our third in 4 years. So I'm not in the classroom right now. I am doing It's Not Rocket Science and the Secondary Science Simplified as much as I possibly can at home with these three tiny humans. And I'm hoping to get back into the classroom one day once my kids are all school age. So if you want to hear more about my life story, if you care, you can check out episode 1. But all that to say, I will say there is one holiday I always made sure to celebrate with my students, and that was Earth Day. And the reason is because if you teach biology or environmental science, I'm pretty confident that human impact on the environment and sustainability are going to be in your standards. So for me, it was just a natural part of what I was already doing to cover my standards for my state EOC exam. And so incorporating a celebration of Earth Day was not hard for me to do. And I really, really enjoyed doing it. So if you don't know a lot about Earth Day, just a tiny bit of background. It started in 1970, which was a time when the world was rapidly advancing from economic and industrial perspectives. But while that was happening, environmental preservation was being set to the side. And so Earth Day was created as a day to recognize the importance of preserving our environment and protecting the Earth despite all of the societal and technological advancements that were happening. And so now April 22nd is observed as a day worldwide where we pause and we assess practical ways each individual can contribute to helping the environment, whether that's in their homes, in their schools, or in their workplaces. And historically speaking, I love that Earth Day has united people from all political and societal and economic backgrounds. It's a day that bridges gaps across streets and neighborhoods and states and even continents because it is the largest secular observance or holiday in the entire world. What a cool opportunity to allow our students to be a part of something that is being celebrated worldwide. And as secondary science teachers, I feel like it's so critical for us to keep science relevant for our students. And this cause does exactly that. We are some of the last people that have a chance to impact these future leaders before they are set free into the world to make their own choices and decisions. And honestly, I kind of believe it's almost our duty to consistently expose them to ways that they can make significant contributions to society. And the sustainable living that Earth Day promotes is absolutely a cause worth inviting our students to know more about and be a part of. So, how did I do this practically with my students? That is what I'm always here to share with you, is practical and simple strategies. So there are so many ways that you can do this. And one of my favorite ways that is incredibly simple and requires virtually no prep is to show a documentary about environmentalism to get your students thinking. I think our students are exposed to so many different things right now with all of the technology that's at their fingertips, but sometimes they're not really getting a good scientific background on certain topics like this that can be somewhat sensationalized in the media. So I love to show a documentary that's really going to give them some scientific facts about sustainability and what's going on in our world. There are a ton of documentaries on this. You know your students best, so I recommend choosing something that you can preview and that will be a good fit for your student population. But a documentary I love, because I love David Attenborough so much, is called A Life on Our Planet, and it's from Netflix, and it came out in 2020, so it's pretty recent. And I actually have a video guide I've already made that you can snag for free if you would like to show this documentary to your students. You just need to go to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/earthday, or just click the link to that in the show notes, and you can grab that, and instantly, you now have your lesson plan for Earth Day. And so while this is something I love to do, this kind of is only the start of my human impact mini unit, if you will, in my biology class, which is a small part of my ecology unit as a whole. So I like to start with showing them a documentary just to get them exposed to the concept of sustainability and the importance of it. But then I really like to dive deep by helping them see how they can be a part of a solution. And so I do this with a resource that I actually created what feels like a decade ago, or maybe even a century. I created it as a part of my graduate school assignment, and I call it the Human Impact Project. So not a very creative name, but it's exactly what it is. So I used this project for Earth Day because, again, it's going to open your students' eyes to how they can play a role in living sustainably. I love it too because it requires very little materials. It gives students lots of choice and autonomy in the project. It gets them researching and thinking critically, and they kind of get to do this like hands-on mini investigation that they design. So really, it's covering so many bases in one project. And so I'm going to tell you how to do it if you would like to do it with your students too. So basically, I introduced this project by first giving students an opportunity to quantify their environmental impact as an individual by using a carbon footprint calculator. You can find a bunch of different versions of this on the internet for free. And of course, this is just an estimate, so it's not, you know, the most precise calculation, but I feel like it gives them a great starting point to work with to put a number on the personal negative contribution that they may be having on the environment. It kind of helps them quantify the impact that their life is having as an individual. So I show them a documentary just to expose them to sustainability. Right now, my favorite is that David Attenborough, A Life on Our Planet from Netflix. And then from there, we would do some sort of carbon footprint calculator that you can find, again, for free on the internet, just to have them kind of do a survey and get a number for what their impact is on the environment at this time. And then after that, students will research and explore different ways that they could decrease their carbon footprint on an individual level. And I think this is really important because I think a lot of times our students think that they're only one person. There's only so much they can do. They live with their parents, or, you know, they're living at their grandma's, or they're living with all these siblings. There's only so much that they can do in their household. But that's true, but it's also not true. It's super limiting. And I want them to see how much they can actually do as an individual person. I want them to see that their individual decisions can and do impact society as a whole. And this project gives them an opportunity and really requires them to research specific and actionable steps that they can take in their own lives. So from there, students are going to come up with two potential action plans, if you will, that they could put into practice to decrease their personal carbon footprints over a 10-day period. And I've tested out different lengths of time, and I found 10 days is just enough time to get a decent amount of data and observations, but not too long that it's just completely unrealistic for them to do. And I think it's really important to have students come up with two full plans, because then you can give them some space to review these with their peers in their class, to talk about each of their plans with their parents or guardians or whoever it is that they live with, and then for you, the teacher, to give them really specific feedback and suggestions. So for example, I'll never forget, I one time had a student, we will call him Key for short, but one of Key's action plans was to go on a vegan diet because he'd done this research and he saw that being vegan has a long-term better impact on the environment. You could argue that. But I reminded Key, I said, Key, you know that you're on the baseball team right now. Do you think that this is a wise choice for you to make while you're practicing 3 hours a day and then going on all these games? Like, do you think this is a good health choice for you in your current season of life? And he was like, you're right. So that's where I like them to come up with two full ideas so that then we have the opportunity to provide feedback. Or a lot of times my students get really excited about an idea. Like I had another student named that we will refer to as Jay, who really, really wanted to ride his bike to school every day to decrease his carbon footprint. And I love the idea. He actually did live close enough to the school that it was feasible, but it was something he did also need to talk about with his parents to make sure that they were cool with that as well, because he drove his little sister to school and they would then have to drive her to school those 10 days since she was not going to be able to ride her bike that distance. So I like for them to come up with two action plans so that then we can get feedback and we can talk about it and we can ask each other questions and make them better. And so once they do that with their peers, with me as a teacher, and with their parents or guardians, then we kind of finalize one plan and we have this one final action plan that they will implement. And I actually make them get a parent or guardian signature on their plan now just to ensure, like, I have somewhere where I can say, you said that you talked to your parent about this. This is where they approved you doing this, whatever that may be. So even though I'm requiring them to collect data and do this for 10 days, I try to give them a month-long period of time where they can be collecting this data from home. This allows them to find the best 10-day window within that month to implement their action plan. And there have been times where students like, I need to do 5 days here, and then I do five at the end of the month, or whatever it may be. And so just giving them a month kind of just gives them more flexibility to make it work for their schedules and their lives. Then at the end of that month, I give them a few days in class to work on the rest of the project. So the only thing they're having to do outside of my classroom is their actual action plan implementation and collecting that data. And then when they're in my class, we work on creating the visual that's going to represent their experiences from their action plan. And then we'll also work on writing the reflective essay on their experiences. So that's kind of the way that I grade this, is with their preparation and coming up with the action plans, that's part of their grade. Another part is the visual representation of their experience, which some students have made a poster. Some have done a video, like a mini video documentary of their time. You know, some have done a PowerPoint, whatever. And then the main portion of it, though, is a reflective essay that I will read. And I grade all of this with a rubric that I include with the project. So that makes it simpler for me as well. And I will say, I don't do a ton of whole class project presentations for many of the projects that I do. And that's because we all know that takes a lot of time. And also, if you've been around this podcast a while, you might be getting the feel that I do a lot of projects, which is true. I do a lot of projects with my students. And I like to do as many projects in class as possible. So if I'm using a ton of class time to let them do the project, then I also have to make up for that class time by not spending 3 to 4 days on presentations. So all that to say, I don't have students present a lot of their projects, but this is one that I do because consistently over the years, students have had so much fun sharing their experiences with their peers. And it's become one of those things that when people look back and talk about Ms. Joyner's biology class, they talk about this project and what so-and-so did on it or what this person had done or whatever. And then they talk about this ecosystem in a bottle project that I always do too. So I just find it's a really, really fun thing to make time for. And also, I feel like doing the presentation kind of helps with the authenticity. Because yes, can I ensure that students are actually collecting data and doing this for 10 days? No, I cannot. I try to set up the rubric and what I require them to collect for their visual representation the best way I can to ensure authenticity. But because anything I'm ever requiring students to do outside of school, I know there will be some that don't take it seriously and do it with integrity. So I have found though, by doing the presentation, it's a little bit easier to sniff out who actually did the project versus who's just kind of winging from the hip, and their peers can sniff it out too. So it kind of helps to encourage more students to take the project seriously when they know they're going to be talking about it in front of their entire class. And also, I find that this is a really great way to help with spring fever, or what I like to call senioritis, which impacts all students, not just seniors. And students just learn so much from sharing their experiences. And it's just always been a really, really fun time. And a little side note, speaking of spring fever, if you feel like your students are on the struggle bus right now, this time of year, as the weather's warming up and it's just so hard to keep their attention, definitely go back and listen to episodes 12, 13, and 14. I did a 3-part series all about senioritis and how I combat it. But doing projects like this is a really easy way to kind of fight those feelings of disengagement in your classroom. I also just really love this project because it's the perfect way to start celebrating Earth Day and then continue that celebration and that observance through the end of your school year. You know, we kind of always ended at the end of May or early June. And so this is something I would start the week of Earth Day. And then they'd have that time that they're working on it at home, collecting their data. And then we'd kind of end the year with a few days in class where we'd be making the visuals, writing the essays, and then presenting them with the class. It was a great way for my students to see that sustainability isn't something that can just be acquired by observing one day out of the year, but it's something that you commit to for a period of time in hopefully, you know, a lifetime. And again, I just think it's a really cool way to end the year too, with students seeing the big picture of all they've learned in my biology class or all they've learned in your environmental class this year, and that they can have a big impact as individuals on a society. What better way than to end the year with students seeing how much they matter as an individual in this world? I can't imagine anything better. And furthermore, if time is permitting, you can also take this and make it a whole school-wide thing and get students involved with initiatives in celebrating Earth Day in places outside of your classroom. So here are 3 ways that I've done that in the past that you could do this too if you want to make it even bigger. First is make cross-curricular connections. There are so many amazing ways that Earth Day has impacted legislature in the United States, beginning with the founding of the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, in 1970 with the very first Earth Day. So this is a great opportunity to connect with the AP government or AP US history teacher at your school and do some sort of horizontal collaboration with them. Also, if you have a marketing class or some sort of marketing internship at your school, see if they want to do an Earth Day campaign to get the word out to the school about why the day should be celebrated and how it can be celebrated. And then lastly, the third thing I've loved to do is collaborate with the head of student council and doing some sort of school-wide initiative to start something to help. I had a couple of students in my class that were Boy Scouts, and they got really fired up about this project, and they worked with the student council, and they did a bunch of great things over the years. We started a school-wide recycling program, and we started a school-wide compost in a school garden. And it was really, really cool to see how this project just really exploded and created some traditions in our school that were continued for years to come. These are just really practical ways that the whole school can get involved. And for, again, your students to see that they as individuals can make a difference in their lives, in their homes, in their school, and eventually in the entire world. So I hope these ideas have inspired you to celebrate Earth Day with your students. And especially if I will say, if you have taught in a virtual or hybrid setting this year, and you just feel like you have missed out on so many of the normal hands-on experiences that you normally give your students, this is an awesome way to end the year with a project that still works really well, whether you're teaching virtually from home or if you're still in person. And if you're in a hybrid setting, this is a really great way to unite your virtual and your in-person students kind of for a common cause. And I love that about this project. And then best of all, it's just a way to end your year by providing your students, regardless of your teaching setting right now, with a memorable experience and learning opportunity that they can apply to their lives for years to come. All is not lost on this school year, teacher friends, although it might feel like it is. So I encourage you to use this project or to use this holiday or this observance or just the cause of sustainability to end the year strong and unite your students for something bigger than themselves. I will link in the show notes the exact resource I use for doing this project, which has like the student handouts and the grading rubrics and a ton of ideas for differentiating the project for your different students' needs. But again, you can just follow along with this episode and make your own version too. And don't forget, if you want to keep it just simple this year and you just want to do something to celebrate Earth Day with basically zero effort on your end, you can totally do that. Just head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/earthday and grab that free video guide to the documentary I mentioned earlier in this episode. You don't win any awards for doing a big fancy project with your students this year, but I do encourage you just to do something with them to celebrate this really cool worldwide day. Thank you for tuning in today. Do you have a teacher friend who could use some inspiration for celebrating Earth Day with their secondary science students? If so, share this episode with them. The best way that we can help more science educators is by word of mouth and sharing episodes that impact us with them. So I would so appreciate your help with that. And don't forget, if you have any questions or topics you would like to see covered on the podcast, send me a DM on Instagram at itsnotrocketscience and let me know what you would like to hear about next. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.